evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is August 11th, 2008, and on this day in history, the Mall of America opened. Can you remember what year that might have been? The Mall of America is in Bloomfield, Minnesota. And it is, of course, the largest shopping mall in the United States, 1992. That's all the time you get. And U.S. Airways filed for bankruptcy on this day in 2002. And Carl Lewis won his fourth gold medal of the 1984 Summer Olympics. And can you guess what year that was? That's correct. Anyway, wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world, including the Olympics. And then a few other topics. So let's start there. Actually, there was a number of things going on in sports this weekend, but of course the big deal was the Olympics. I didn't watch the opening ceremonies Friday night. That pomp and circumstance is a little beyond me. I don't quite get it. But I did see some of the pictures, and they were spectacular. Tonight, in fact, right about now, Michael Phelps is going for his third gold medal. He has won two, had an individual one, won a relay with his teammates last night in a spectacular race that was a photo finish almost, closest race in swimming race in Olympic history, 8/100ths of a second. And the oldest swimmer on the team ran the fourth leg, the final leg, the anchor leg. And he started out a full body length behind the French fellow that ran their fourth leg. And that Frenchman was regarded as the best in the pool that night, the fastest in the pool. And our guy put in the performance of a lifetime and beat the French. And, of course, that's particularly sweet if you believe in payback, because the French team had said that they were going to not crush the Americans, I forget the term, but that's the kind of thing that goes up on the locker room wall and people are out to get you after that. And of course then, if you're a conservative, they are after all the French and they don't do everything we want and we can't abide that. Also, the heat and humidity is already taking its toll. There was a 152-mile cycling race, a road race, and only two-thirds of the runners finished. It was 86 degrees, 94% humidity, which is kind of like it is in Washington, D.C. a lot of summer days, but it has a high pollution quotient there. On the good side, they pedaled past places like the Forbidden City and underneath the Great Wall of China, things like that. But it was the pollution that probably did him in, because 143 cyclists took off and 53 of them didn't finish. That's more than a third. Not good. And the other thing that was interesting, I don't know if you had a chance to see any of the fencing yet, but it's worth checking out the fencing just to see the electronic scoring and how the suits work. So the suits are wired. And if you touch your opponent with your saber, your sword, you score points based on where you touch that person on the suit and who strikes first. And the machines can tell who beats the other person to the to who draws blood first, as it were. Of course, they don't draw blood anymore, but that's what the sport goes back to. So if you get a chance, it's actually pretty interesting to see fencing explained. And it was news to me to find out that they've been using electronic scoring since the 1936 Olympics. There's a spring-loaded button on the end of the sword that causes a light to go on when it's pushed in with enough force. In other words, when you strike somebody in the chest or wherever. And the electronic jackets that the fencers wear sense valid hits. Right? But what's interesting was in the old days, they used to use ink at the end of the swords. Before 1936, they used ink, and then they would count the ink dots, I guess, on the judge would keep track of that. But anyway, Oh, also, the American basketball team warmed up by beating China by 31 points, and our president was there waving an American flag. He held up an American flag backwards, but it was right from his point of view, which is kind of the way our president looks at the world. I did think it was a little unseemly that we were that our president was so flag happy. He was waving a little flag at times, but I guess that's what he's got to do as president. And of course, George W. Bush is one of those people who wears a lapel pin virtually all the time. I wonder if he has one on his pajamas, because he's not really very patriotic if he goes to bed naked, I mean, without a flag pin on. Maybe he has one tattooed on his chest. Now, that would save a lot of time. In fact, maybe I should get one tattooed on my chest. Then I don't have to worry about questions from my conservative listeners who say, are you wearing your lapel pin? I can always say with a straight face, yes, I am, even at the beach. Anyway, Michael Phelps is going for his third gold tonight in the 200-meter freestyle. He currently holds the world record in that, so he may well get his third one tonight. He's aiming for eight. He will be in eight events, and of course, that would break the record long held by Mark Spitz of seven gold medals in one Olympics. I think he won six medals, Phelps did, in the 2004 Olympics. I don't think he won six gold, but I'm just not sure. I can't quite remember. Anyway, that's coming up. We'll know about that later tonight. And then there was another little item that's worth noting, and that is that now that the games are on, we're not hearing too much about this, but basically China has said they've set up protest pens for people that wanted to protest, but they've been denying almost everybody that does the paperwork. They're denying them a permit to protest. I'm sure they'll have a few people protesting because they can't have the protest areas empty. That would not look good. But basically what organizers and protesters now believe is that what the Chinese are doing is collecting information on dissonance. And so people stopped going to fill out the paperwork since everybody was being denied, and B, they weren't at all convinced China was doing this in good faith. And you got to say, that's one of the great things about the United States. We may have little incidents where a few years ago the D.C. police were spying on protesters and otherwise looking up information about them, and we go back and they were treated even more harshly in previous years, going back several decades. The FBI kept files on them and all that, but you never had the feeling that we were taking them out, and I wouldn't put that past China. The other big news over the weekend, the fourth and final Gulf Major was held, and I got to tell you, I was rooting for Sergio Garcia. He's never won a major, and he's overdue. But Patrick Harrington came through, and when somebody's playing good golf, it's just not up to those of us that want something to happen. A good golfer rises to the challenge. So Patrick Harrington won two majors this year, and he is on the map because now he has a total of three majors. And so nice go, and this was held in Michigan. It was rained out a lot, or had a lot of rain on Saturday. But the fourth major's in the books. By the time we get to the Masters next year, Tiger Woods should be back in the field. So all bets are off. And finally, Kyle Busch won a victory at Watkins Glen in the Watkins Glen Invitational. I'm sorry, International, it's called. And that's my favorite course of all times because it was the very first Grand Prix course I ever went to. I grew up about an hour and a half from Watkins Glen, New York, and I've seen a number of historic events there, including some Can-Am races in the 70s, did I get there in the 60s? I might have got there in the 60s and the 70s. Some Grand Prix there, back when there was only one Grand Prix in the United States, and the largest rock concert in history, at least at the time, 600,000 people gathered there in the summer of 73, and there's only one road in and one road out of Watkins Glen, so you know there was a traffic jam. Usually they have 130 to 150,000 for a Grand Prix race, at least back then they did four times that, with still one road in and one road out. Sticking with entertainment a little bit, the top 10 movies list for this week is interesting. I don't usually talk about movies here, but The Dark Knight, which is the new Batman movie, is on top as the movie that sold the most, brought in the most money for the fourth week in a row. Do you know how unusual it is for one movie to be top grossing several weeks in a row? It's really unusual. And Dark Knight has now got $441 million, which it's on target to be the second greatest grossing movie of all time. I think the first one is Spider-Man 2 or 3. See, I wish they wouldn't do it by dollar amount. I wish they'd do it by number of tickets sold, because then, of course, somebody could put out $2 tickets, I guess, and take the record away. But it's not fair, because you can't compare Star Wars, like the original Star Wars or the original Indiana Jones, to these movies, because that was 20, 25 years ago, and the ticket prices have tripled. So naturally, they're going to outdraw those as moneymakers. Anyway, $441 million, and it's still the number one movie. The Pineapple Express, which I have for some reason heard at least two or three reviews of. It's a stoner movie. I'm not going to see that, but it was number two. And Mamma Mia is still on the list at number six after 4 weeks. And so is Journey of the Center of the Earth after five. Anyway... Oh, and Hancock. It's been around a few weeks. Anyway, that's it in the movie business. Yes, the only other thing I do want to say about the Olympics or the situation in China is when Chinese people are interviewed, they assume that the Olympics is their coming out party. They're unaware of all these protests that have gone on, whether it was about Tibet or the Uyghurs or just China's human rights abuses. And... they're unaware of a lot of this stuff because their media doesn't report it. So they're under the impression that the world loves China. And, you know, I mean, I guess the world has nothing against China except that how they treat their people and a few things like that. But it's just interesting that, you know, they have a big monstrous firewall. The Great Wall has been replaced by the Great Firewall, and they don't allow their people to go out on the Internet and see... You know, basic sites like the BBC Asia, the BBC sites, the CNN sites, basic news sites are blocked from them because it reports things that are critical of China, and they can't have that. People might get the wrong idea inside the country. And let's see, other light news, if it can be considered light news. Well, there's not too much left in the world of light. I guess the only other thing, and I'm not quite sure this qualifies as light, there was a picture last week in the paper last Friday of Victoria Osteen, and I had never seen her before, I don't think. She's a very attractive blonde, and so that caught my attention, the picture of her. And then I read the article, and it turns out that she's a combative diva. So if you are unaware, she's the wife of Joel Osteen. You can watch Joel Osteen do his thing. He is a preacher and a new kind of Christian preacher. He preaches in a megachurch. It's the size of Madison Square Garden and looks nicer on the inside. And you can see him on the Fox channel, Channel 5 here in the D.C. area, 10 a.m. every Sunday morning. And he is a different kind of preacher. He's in the mold of Robert Schuller, where his message is hardly fire and brimstone, and he certainly isn't preaching hate or even dislike of anybody. It's basically take control of your life. It's personal responsibility. It's pull yourself up by your bootstrap and do it in a Christian way. That's why it was surprising to see this item. His wife is on trial right now in Houston for assaulting a flight attendant on a flight, before she got on a flight, they both got on a flight to Vail, Colorado. And basically, the flight attendant spilled a drink or some liquid on Victoria Osteen. They were sitting in first class seats going to Vail, Colorado. And she got upset. She grabbed the flight attendant, pushed her, elbowed her apparently in the chest, a few other things. The flight attendant sued. Charges were brought against her. And they were taken off the plane, and the flight was delayed 2.5 hours while they pulled their luggage off the plane. Now, that does not sound like a very Christian approach to having something spilled on you. So she is a pre-Madonna, I guess is the way to put it. So, you know, I always wonder about people like that, why they get such a sense of self-importance. You know, you should consider pretty cool. She's also a preacher, by the way. She is the co-pastor, or whatever the title is, of the church, the mega church that they have in Houston. And it's just amazing to me that somebody who's a religious person like that can... I mean, I guess you should be grateful you're flying to Vail first class. No, that's not enough. You get insulted when something goes wrong. Weird. Anyway, I guess I'm not quite moving into politics yet, but it was interesting. Michelle Obama was in Virginia last week. She was stumping for the Obama ticket. Well, we don't have a second person on the ticket yet. But middle of last week, she was in Southern Virginia. Now, usually, Democrats try and get as many votes as they can in Northern Virginia, but the Obama campaign is going to contest Virginia this year and try and take it away from the Democrats. It's been pretty much a red state, even though we have had a couple of Democratic governors in a row, and we have a Democratic senator right now, and we're probably going to have two with the retirement of Senator Warner, the statesman, the older fella, Senator Warner, John Warner, former husband of Elizabeth Taylor, but he's a much more serious politician than that. He's one of the statesmen in the Senate. He's retiring, and former Governor Mark Warner, no relation, a Democrat, is running for that Senate seat, and he is wildly popular. He was his governor. In fact, if Obama wanted to take the state for sure, he would choose Mark Warner as his VP. And that would probably pave Mark Warner's road to the presidency. But I think they want Mark Warner to take the Senate seat. So, in any case, Michelle Obama was stumping in Southern Virginia, basically in the Hampton Roads area. And just interesting that they're going to contest this all over Virginia. The other thing, and this is not light news, but we're still in the area of somewhat light news, we have the case finally got settled. Well, it didn't get settled. The anthrax case got handled here, and the U.S. government says that Bruce Ivins acted alone. Of course, they were after this other guy for the longest time, and they finally cleared him after Bruce Ivins committed suicide. But basically, they were closing in on him. They wanted to talk to him. They were pretty sure he did it, and he committed suicide before they got to him. And so the FBI held a press conference last Wednesday and presented the evidence that was there for him. If you remember the anthrax killings, there were five killings. He sent anthrax in a letter to people like Tom Brokaw, Senator Tom Daschle, and a few other politicians and media people. And he didn't kill them, of course. They're all still with us. What happened was the people that handled it in post offices contracted anthrax. Not all of them died. Some of them were just made sick, and sick rather permanently. But they finally wrapped that case up. It went on for more than 5 years. And some people are saying, we're still not sure we got the right guy and that the government may be trying to rush this. So people have called for an independent investigation, and I think that's a good idea. I'd like to see this put to bed. There seems to be some doubt about some of the evidence. So simplest way to deal with that is to just go for a little bit of independent assessment and see what we get. And let's move on to... Oh, there's one more local news item, I guess. One of my greatest fears whenever I go over the Chesapeake Bay Bridge is... Well, I guess it'd be falling in, because the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, it's Route 50 that takes you from Washington, D.C. out to the Delaware and the Maryland shore, Ocean City, Assateague Island in Maryland, and in Delaware, north of there. The Bay Bridge is a pretty hairy ride. When I'm on that bridge, it's one of the highest bridges, and it also looks to be one of the most I don't want to say fragile because it seems safe enough, but you're up really high, and one of them's not even a suspension bridge. And so you do get the sense that it could, that a very strong wind or hurricane could raise heck with it. But beyond the fear of what would happen if you ever went through the railing and plunged over at those heights, it's a couple hundred feet up at its highest point. But the other fear I have is, suppose I'm waiting to get on the bridge. I mean, sometimes you're doing 60 miles an hour and sometimes you're doing 5 miles an hour. It's so crowded, depending on the time of day you go. But suppose you're approaching the bridge and there's an accident on the bridge. Well, what would happen would be you couldn't get past. And there's no way to route traffic around the Bay Bridge. It's such a long loop around, you would sit there for 5 or 10 hours if that's what it took. Hopefully you'd be able to turn around, go the other way, and go back where you came from, or go to a restaurant or something for a few hours. But traffic was backed up for more than 10 hours. The way I read this thing, there was an accident. So it was Saturday morning, or I mean, I guess it was early Sunday morning, and it, more than 12 hours later, 16, 17 hours later, they opened one lane on the bridge that was damaged. So basically, there's a three-lane modern suspension-type bridge that goes westbound, and the eastbound lanes are a two-lane older bridge. And there was an accident on the bridge very early Sunday morning, like 4 a.m. or something, and a tractor-trailer went over the edge, broke through the Jersey barrier that's on the edge, and went over the edge, and the driver was killed. And the two motorists in the other car that were involved in the accident were hospitalized, but not seriously, I don't think. So they closed that bridge for like 16 hours on a Sunday. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. Traffic was backed up more than 10 miles. I only mention it because this is always been one of my greatest fears when you go over the bridge. If you're stuck behind it, there's nothing you can do. Anyway, don't need to spend any more time on traffic. We got a more serious problem in the world, and it's Georgia. And I don't mean Georgia next to Alabama. I mean Georgia next to the former Soviet Union, part of the former Soviet Union, Georgia next to Russia. Because right now there's a little bit of a war flaring up over there. If you were watching some of the network coverage, the NBC coverage of the Olympics on, was it Friday night or Saturday night? I forget which time, but there was a split screen. It showed I think it was Friday night, because it showed the Olympic opening ceremonies on one side, and it showed the war raging between Russia and Georgia on the other side. Now, I'm going to talk about this for, just a few minutes, but let's talk first about what's going on. So, this has been coming for a long time. It's a situation that has, it shouldn't surprise us that it's come to this. There's been no settlement of these things. Basically, Georgia broke away from the Soviet Union and became an independent state when the Soviet Union broke up. But there are a couple of provinces within Georgia that are, quote, breakaway republics. And they have more of an affinity and affiliation with Russia and want to break away from the original state of Georgia that was formed. And Georgia doesn't want to let them go. Well, they've been breakaway republics for the better part of 8-10 years, and Russia supports them. Well, over the end of last week, the president of Georgia, and get this, Condi Rice was in town just 2 days before this, the president of Georgia sent troops into these disputed areas, these breakaway areas, and tried to force them, the rebels in that area, to cease and desist what they were doing. And Russia used that as an excuse because Georgia acted first. They responded, and they responded with some serious force. they, of course, have Georgia outgunned, and they sent tanks across. They've been doing military strikes, strikes from airplanes, and they are still doing them. This went on more than Friday, went on Saturday. By Saturday, Georgia was willing to sign a ceasefire, and Russia ignored their offer of a ceasefire. And Georgia did sign a ceasefire, and Russia ignored it, and continues to bomb even today. So now we get to the politics of it. The Bush administration, both Bush and Cheney, have issued fairly carefully worded statements. Putin went home from the Olympics, though, to deal with this war, and George W. Bush stayed in China as planned to watch the American basketball team and watch Michael Phelps swim, and he's coming home now. I don't think he's back yet. Maybe he is. But basically, now the analysis, besides the fact that we got a war on our hands, or in the air, that we have to think about the consequences of it, the politics is the next thing that I hear the pundits talking about. So the Republicans are criticizing Obama for having too weak a response. Basically, what happened is McCain is more of a hawk on a lot of issues than even Bush is. And so McCain has, he's suggested we throw Russia out of the G8. You know, on one level, I like that idea. I don't think they belong in the G7. The G7 are democracies with large economies. Russia doesn't qualify as a democracy. On the other hand, Russia has all that oil, and Europe needs it. So I'm not sure we can afford to throw them out of the G8. And they certainly have a lot of leverage, and we can't force them to do what we want them to do anymore. And this war has taken place in their backyard. This is a country that's on their border. So the idea that we could do anything militarily, even if we weren't in Iraq, and we are tied down in Iraq, thanks to some brilliant decision-making, even if we weren't, it'd be hard to do anything. So McCain is being quite bellicose. Both Bush and Cheney are out there saying, hey, there are going to be serious consequences. Well, what they mean by serious consequences is not military consequences. They mean we may take economic action. I think that's what they mean. And I think we have there's a limit to what we can do there. So I think McCain is engaged in bluster, and were he to get elected, there isn't much we could do. Plus, the confrontational approach, this red state of mind about foreign affairs, hasn't really delivered all that much, as we've seen from the last 7 years. So that's my main problem with McCain is on foreign policy. They say that he's qualified, and somehow Obama may not be, but gosh, when you're in a red state of mind like that, and you think the military is the solution to all this, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. So anyway, the response by Obama has been more, we need both sides to take a step back. Now, Georgia's already taken a step back because they're being pummeled, but Georgia did start it. And you don't take the sleeping bear, the Russian bear, and poke him and wake him up. And basically, Georgia gave Putin an excuse to go in, and that was a mistake. So we got a mess on our hands, but I'm sure you can trust George Bush to clean it up. No, I'm reminded of the adage, if it ain't fixed, don't break it again.